This is Digital Story Podcast number 671, January 22nd, 2019. Today's theme is The Real Tintype, Not the App. An interview with Jeremiah Flynn. I'm Derek Story. Tintype photography dates back to the 1800s, and in the hands of today's capable artists, it's still alive. For some folks, their knowledge of tintype is confined to an app on their smartphone. But the actual process is fascinating, and we'll chat with a true tintype photographer today and learn more about this wonderful art form. A while back, I was hanging around in Jeremiah's shop, and it's called Jeremiah's Photo Corner, and it serves both digital and analog photographers, has all sorts of stuff there. And there wasn't anyone around at the time. He said, hey, come here. Come on in the back. I want to show you my studio. And he took me into the studio and put a tintype portrait in my hands. And I have to say that I had the same sort of feeling when he put the tintype portrait in my hands that I talk about printing in general, where you take one of your images and you put it on some wonderful paper and you hand it to somebody and they have a completely different experience. And that's the way I felt about this tintype portrait. I go, this is really neat. And he showed me the camera and the lens, showed me a little bit about the darkroom and all this stuff. And I was saying, you know, I think this would be a very interesting conversation. I don't think a lot of people realize that tintype photography is alive and well. And I said, would you be willing to come onto the show? And he said, yes, of course, of course. So we set up a time, and I went on down to his shop. I had my portable recorder with me, and we decided to record the show right there in the middle of the shop during business hours. So we thought it'd be fun. So everything's going on, people coming in and out, music's wafting on the radio, the whole deal. And we talk a little bit about photography in general, but get into tintype photography so that you can learn about this art form, because I think it's fascinating and it's still going on. And Jeremiah is practicing this right now. You can make an appointment, go down to a studio, and have a tintype made for you. And they're beautiful. They're absolutely beautiful. So without further ado, I'm going to take us into Jeremiah's Photo Corner. We're going to sit down, and we're going to talk about photography in a whole different way. I hope you enjoy this chat. I'm sitting here with Jeremiah in Jeremiah's Photo Corner in south of 8th Street in Santa Rosa. And we're in your shop right now, aren't we?
Yes. Yep. We're right down here in the Arts District in Santa Rosa, California.
How long you been here, man?
Store's been here for a little over 9 years. And yeah, great little neighborhood. You know, we got galleries around here and art studios and a couple of funky places to eat and whatnot.
So what kind of folks wander in the doors here?
Oh, the people who wander in. we get actually, you know, because of the food and the just the fact that this neighborhood is labeled the Arts District, we get, you know, all sorts of people coming in, looking at the windows and displays and being like, wow, I haven't seen a film photography shop for forever. So, yeah, a lot of people wander in who either are interested in photography or people who haven't taken pictures, you know, for a long time, I should say, haven't taken pictures with outside of their phone, perhaps, for years. So, yeah, they're always kind of amazed that we're still around.
So, I mean, how do people, I mean, obviously film photographers that come in the door, they're on mm-hmm. a mission, right? They want to process their film or buy some film or something like
that. Sure.
But how about the folks that aren't film photographers? What's kind of the conversations that you have in here? I mean, are they just like amazed that you're still here?
Or oh, yes. Yeah, because they're like, I thought all of these kind of stores died off, you know? And yeah, for the most part, you know, film-based photography brick and mortar stores are a rarity these days. But there still are, you know, a handful. I mean, we're just on the outskirts of the Bay Area, so we still have a clientele that's interested in unique processes and art and being creative and stuff. And film photography is definitely one of those things. So yeah, the conversation, it's interesting. People come in and they're like, wait, you're a film-based store? I thought they stopped making film. And it's like, oh, no, we have plenty of film. So usually it's, you know, informing them that, by golly, if you want to shoot film, you can still do it.
So you do another kind of photography too, and that's one thing I really wanted to get to, which is tintype.
Yes.
If people think that film photography, 35mm film photography, is a lost art form, then tintype must be like back another couple generations, right?
It's a process from the 1850s, and so it is definitely something, I wouldn't say a lost art. It's been, you know, there's always been practitioners over the years, but now it's kind of getting a little more of a resurgence, I'll say. I mean, still not in huge numbers, but more people are interested in it. And they're like, hey.
Yeah, I mean, it seems alive and well to me. Now, I, of course, you run a tintype studio, so you would tell me, but let's start with what it is. Let's, you know, what is tintype, and, you know, and then maybe we'll get into why some people just really love the look.
Gotcha. Well, actually, that's what drew me to the process. Mm-hmm. Even when I was starting photography and starting to study photography, you know, back, many years ago, that I remember looking at tintypes and being like, wow, these look different. Some of them looked subtly different, and some of them looked, you know, extremely different, but they were, you know, more or less black and white images. Sometimes they had a tone to them, but they were always very striking. Very, you know, wow, what is it that makes this different from just a traditional black and white image? And so, getting back to the kind of the roots of the process, 1850s, they figured out that they could make silver salts light sensitive with tintypes. The big thing was they figured out collodion, which they had developed as like liquid bandages for medical purposes that they could suspend the light-sensitive silver salts in that. And that was kind of the big thing. And then they put on a rigid substrate, which was actually not tin. Originally, they made it out of iron, but the tin type sounds a lot better than iron type.
Yeah, iron type doesn't really resonate. But, I mean, that is one of the things. When, let's say someone comes to your studio here, and they hire you for a portrait session.
Yep.
So what is the deliverable? What do they walk away with when you're done with the whole thing?
So they actually get the tintype plates. Mm-hmm. So they come in if they're, you know, depending on the shoot, people are here from anywhere an hour and a half to two and a half hours, depending on how many plates we're actually doing. And they walk away with the actual plates that we've made in the studio. They wash and they dry. I usually dry them overnight and scan them before delivering the plates, mm-hmm. in case the people want prints or they have other family members they want to distribute images to. But then they do walk away with the actual plates that I poured and created and went into the back of the camera and were made during the shoot.
So it's true art in the sense of that, you know, in the way that you would do a painting or something.
Yeah.
You know, you paint on the canvas, you have the canvas. Yeah, you could take a picture of the canvas or scan it, but I mean, there's one canvas.
Yes.
And exactly. In this case, there's one tintype.
Right. There's a quality to a tintype. You look at it, you go, that's silver.
Yep.
That's silver on metal. Like, wow. Yeah, you can make a print. I mean, I can do, you know, scans and prints from them. But then it's a print. You know, it's pigment on paper, which is a completely different thing than seeing a you know, metal. Like, especially when it's your likeness or your family's likeness or whatever, your dog's likeness, whatever the tintype subject is. You see that and you're like, whoa, that's me in metal. And it's the moods of it too. When you go through the processing, I invite the people into the darkroom, which is fun too. Which is the whole thing's fun for me. And so I take them into the darkroom. They see the process, and they see the plate as it kind of transforms and it becomes into a negative, and they put in the fixer and it kind of reveals itself and becomes a positive. And people, they're just like, whoa! And there's this moment too. As kind of, I've labeled it the kind of the moment of self-realization, where I take somebody's picture, they come in the darkroom, they see that the plate, you know, is in my hand, the plate goes through the chemistry, goes into the fixer, their image comes up, and they're staring right at it, and they know that's the plate that has their image on it, and it's a delayed 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, and then they go, that's me. And I sometimes they're taken aback, and sometimes mm-hmm. They're just like, oh, and sometimes it's, oh yes, that is me. And it's delayed, as opposed to, you know, if I took a picture of somebody with my cell phone and I flipped it around, said, yeah, but they'd be like, of course that's me. That's how I look. But to see their image like translated through the tintype process, it's, they know it's them, but it's kind of another sense of them, like
maybe it is
alter ego or just something inside them, and I love that. I love that.
I do too. It's a different interpretation of them,
yes.
Or however you want to put it. Now, I'm guessing that you have to prepare these plates yourself. That there isn't like a tintype store where you go and you buy your supply. You know.
No. Luckily, I will say I started the process, or I did the process gosh, it's about 14, 15 years ago. And at that time, there wasn't really the chemistry available. Now, you know, there's a couple suppliers that you can actually get somewhat pre-mixed chemistry, mm-hmm. at least. But you do, the process does require that you pour the plate just before you take the picture. So the collodion too, without getting into too many specifics, you have to age some of the chemistry for it to be of a usable contrast level. And that's kind of depends on the subject matter of who you're shooting and you know, pigment in their skin and kind of what the mood you want the image to be. So like for me, I usually mix the collodion, you know, 24 hours beforehand, sometimes 3 days. I usually have several models depending on how the person responds to the, and how their, you know, their pigmentation responds to the lights. And so I have, it's kind of, you go into the darkroom, we can go into the darkroom later, and you can see I have many brown bottles. It looks like some sort of, you know, chemistry studio kind of thing where you play alchemist on the fly, you know, you're just like, oh, that last play didn't have enough contrast. I put a little bit of this in there, or, ooh, wow, there's not enough shadow detail on that. Let me drop the contrast a little bit. And so you're always mixing things up, and it's, you know, it's just wonderful.
It's crazy alchemy, isn't it?
It is. Really, it's great. It's so exciting. It's stinky and messy, and it's wonderful.
So now, how did you learn this? Did you have a mentor, or, you know, did you read a book? I'm guessing there's not too many YouTube videos on this.
Well, you know, if you can piece it together. Uh-huh. The nice thing about it is you can go back to literally the text from the 1850s. I think there is an 1870s-ish book that's... gosh, I want to say the whole text is online that you can find. But if you can read it, you know, you can read it. Like people in the 1870s, this is how you took a photograph. So uh-huh. this was the normal right. way that you took pictures. And so it's all very spelled out, you know, even like, oh, if it's high humidity, do this. Or if it's high temperature, do this. And mixing your chemistry, wow. because the chemistry is very sensitive to humidity and temperature, obviously exposure and those things. But yes, you can... kind of piece it together. But yeah, I didn't necessarily have a mentor. Mm-hmm. I did, but there was enough information. There's actually Bostick and Sullivan, which they supply a lot of alternative process chemistry. They have the chemistry to do it, and they provide rudimentary instructions. And then when I did start doing it, and I did want to be consistent, I did. I have a friend, Dana, who's an engineer, and he.
I think I met him. Yeah. I think he was in the shop once. Right?
Yeah, yeah, he's great. He's very humble and does not take any credit. But he was the one who really made me be consistent, and really he knew the chemistry, and was like, okay, these are the variables you're dealing with. You have to control humidity, temperature. You have to be aware of evaporation rates. You have to be aware of all these things, because you can get successful tintypes. You know, you can kind of be lucky and stuff, but, you know, because I'm offering a studio, I want to be consistent. And so that's where I joked he took a stick, and whenever I left the cap off of the ether too long, he'd poke me and say, evaporation, you know. And he did that, and it was, you know, when people are like, oh, teach me about tintypes, I'm like, I'm going to give you a very condensed version of it. I don't normally teach people tintypes because... Right. It's 4 hours of chemistry and safety.
Right.
You know, you can do weekend workshops and stuff at other places, and they kind of do, you know, more of a rough and ready kind of, you know, let's get some tintypes going, stuff like that. But, you know, the people, I have taught a couple of people, and it has been like, okay, you're serious and you're going to do tintypes, so let's get into it.
You know, a lot of times in photography, you know, we're pre-visualizing the shot, yeah. you know, in other words, so I kind of have an idea of what I want, and then I'm trying to work my tools to get that. Is tintype like that, or is it that you just, you know, put all the pieces in motion and then see what happens?
It's a little bit of both.
Uh-huh.
The same thing, those variables, mm-hmm. and just knowing what the variables are and controlling them. I'd like to say the word that I think in my brain is that you have to be very deliberate, because mm-hmm. you're only going 10, 15 minutes between plates when you're kind of in the flow and shooting.
Right.
And so you don't want to ever waste a plate.
Uh-huh.
And so you're very deliberate about what the lights are doing, what the lights, where they are, what the person, if they're comfortable, you know, it's all those kind of things. Most people aren't used to a photographer staring at them for 5 minutes setting up the lights.
Exactly.
You know? And so that, you just have to, some people like silence, some people like conversation. Mm-hmm. So, and so it's just you kind of the same thing that every photographer more or less deals
yeah.
with.
So now let's talk about the camera itself, because this is a pretty... beast, right? This is a big camera.
It's an 8x10 camera. Uh-huh. The one that I use isn't necessarily very old. It's actually an 80s camera. It's a Cambo, made in Holland in the 1980s. The lens, though, is old. I just happen to use an old lens. It's not necessarily that you need to have an old lens to take tintypes, but the lens I have is a Voigtlander lens from the 1920s. And it's a sharp, fast lens. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, I could get a modern lens, but it would be, boy, it would be probably over $1,500 or something like that. And so I have an old lens, and it's great. Doesn't even have shutter in it. And but the exposure on the tintype emulsion is so low, the ISO, the sensitivity of it is, you know, less than one. And so you know, your exposures aren't, if you're using daylight or you're using consistent, you know, constant light source, then, you know, by golly, it's not, you can leave the cap off for however long, and just, you know, you're even in daylight, it's probably 2 seconds or so wide open. Mm-hmm. You know, and then in this studio, I'm usually using strobes. So I have to focus, and then cap comes off, and then I can just use a pop. Sometimes I have to use strobes with a little bit of constant light, depending on whatever's going on in the person.
Right. So the subject, though, has to, like, you say, okay, now we're going to do it, and you can't move, right? This is kind of like one of those things, right?
I warn people. I say I'm very pleasant at the beginning, but when the plate's in the holder, I become a micromanager, if need be. Most people are just mentioning that. So, yeah, it takes me about 5 to 10 seconds to focus. That's where I need the person to hold still.
Yeah.
And then it takes me a few seconds just to open the back, put the plate holder in, take the lens cap off, pop the shutter.
Because focusing is critical, right? I mean, one of the things about tintypes is, you know, I always notice the eyes. The eyes seem to just jump off the metal there.
Yeah.
And I take it that's what the critical focus is on the eyes.
Yes. Yeah. And so I do a lot of, because it's an 8x10 camera, it has movements. And so, not all 8x10 cameras have movements, but the camera that I have has movements, so I can control the perspective, so I can swing it, and I can tilt, and I can do whatever I need to do. I try to get, well, once again, I always discuss with the people what they want. How do they want to be portrayed in their portrait?
Right.
And so, if kind of my default is, yes, to get both eyes in focus.
Right.
But that's not necessarily what everybody wants. Some people want to be a little more mysterious and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but I do utilize the movements in the camera a lot to get those eyes sharp.
Wow. It's really cool. Okay, so let's say somebody wants a tintype portrait. They can send you an email, they call, how do they set up? Because you're up in the Bay Area here, so I would say, from San Francisco all the way up to anywhere in Northern California, this is probably the place, isn't it,
for
that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, we do. I get some people, you know, there's a couple of tintypists, you know, in the Bay Area, and so I get, you know, but we all have kind of different styles, and, you know, just like every other photographer, sometimes you'd see an image, you're like, oh, I resonate or respond to that one, that's great, and this one doesn't, you know, whatever. And so, yeah, I've had some people come up from the East Bay and San Francisco and Silicon Valley, and yeah, they can email me. You know, my website's just jeremiahflynn.com. Even the website for the store, Jeremiah's Photo Corner, has a link that says Tintype Studio, and you can go there, and it has a little contact form there. And, you know, my telephone number's on there, too. And,
yeah, I'll make sure we have all those links in the show notes so people can check it out. So, now, I was going to ask you about something else here, too.
Sure.
And, you know, I thought this was just spectacular and virtually the same as a tintype, which is this new app on your iPhone. I mean, great. Isn't it exactly the same?
Oh, it is. Yes. Well, it was interesting. I kind of what we were talking about, actually, where, you know, I don't know the process that they use, but the, you know, going back to the tintype process, you know, it does see a little bit into the visible blue spectrum, but most of it is in the ultraviolet. So that's where it kind of has that surrealistic glow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing, I don't know, maybe the tintype app people, developers, can tell me if this is true. This is my guess, is that they take a color picture, they discard the red and the green channels, and they take the blue channel, and they jack that up, and then, you know, probably add a little vignette and a little.
They do. There's like the kind of some swirly vignette-y kind of
pencil lens kind of thrown on there and stuff. So, is it exactly the same as a tintype? Is it going to last 150 plus years? I'm not sure. Your great great grandchildren are going to pick out their iPhones and be like, "My God, look, it's Grandpa." I don't know. It's a How about it's a different process.
It's a different process. Medium. And, you know, the thing about, I mean, the thing, we're having fun with this, obviously. Yes. The thing about it is that, though, I think you kind of alluded to it, that it's fun to play with because the look is interesting.
Yeah.
But you don't get the finished product that you get to hold in your hand.
Yeah.
And this is something that we actually talk a lot about on the site and on this podcast, which is printing. I'm a big advocate of just printing in general because... Right. I like the idea of being an artist from start to finish. In other words, you know, I conceive of the idea, I make it happen, and then output, I actually produce something that people can hold and look at. Yeah. And the Tintype app is fun in the sense that, yeah, you could put it on Instagram or put it in your photo feed, but you don't get to walk away with anything. And there isn't a service that say, hey, now you send that and we'll send it back to you on a piece of metal or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for people who haven't actually seen, walked into your studio and actually you hand them, you go, here, take a look at this.
Right.
It's a whole different ball game. I mean, the metal has so much to do with, what it is.
Exactly. I mean, what you're holding in your hand is... You know, it's aluminum that's got a enamel on it that's got silver, usually in your likeness,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's, I don't know, it's an experience.
Exactly. It's a physical experience.
Yeah.
You know, that's cool.
Yeah.
So, okay. So if you guys thinking that it's time for a tintype portrait, I highly recommend it. And we have the guy right here. Thanks, Jeremiah, so much. I'll put all your information in the show notes. And thanks for being on the show.
Great. Thanks, Derek.
All right.
That was really cool. I really enjoyed sitting down with Jeremiah and talking about this. Now, I have a link to Jeremiah's Photo Corner in the show notes. So you can click on it and you can, you know, learn about what's going on. This is the place where I hang out. This is my local photography community in the North Bay. Also, there you can learn about tintype. You can even, if you decide to come to the North Bay, you got to go to the shop for sure. There's a great place to eat, Catty Corner. It's called Spinster Sisters. It's a lovely place to eat. So you can make a couple hours out of your afternoon quite lovely by doing this. And then if you want, you could even schedule an appointment to have your own tintype made. It's interesting, it's beautiful, and I just love it that we still have tintype photographers practicing so that this art form is available to us right now. The Portfolio Box tip of the week. Did you know you can display your Instagram photos on your Portfolio Box site? You can. And not only that, you can do it with a bit of control. Creating an Instagram page is an easy way of having fresh content flow into your site. You just need to connect your Instagram account with your Portfolio Box site, and each time you post an image with a specific tag, the image will also display on your Portfolio Box site. Sounds really cool, right? And the nice thing about this is that you have control over which shots from Instagram go into Portfolio Box and which ones do not. So you probably don't want to put the shot of your lunch today on your Portfolio Box site, but if you grab a really cool portrait, then maybe that's something that you want on your page on Portfolio Box. And you can show people, hey, you know, I'm an all-around photographer. I do all sorts of stuff. And I have a cool Instagram site, which might also help your Instagram site grow as well. So you can read the step-by-step instructions on the link that I have in the show notes. You just click on it, it'll take you right through it. So you can set up your Portfolio Box site to have this functionality, make it a little bit more dynamic, you know, show a different side of you as a photographer. It's really easy to do. And, you know, I think you'll probably really get into it too. I also want to talk about our photo contest, Black and White Portraits. Today is the last day, January 22nd, 2019, to submit for this particular challenge. Now, the selected artist will win a pro account with Portfolio Box for 1 year. That's a really nice price and will be featured on the digital story. Now, if you want to start playing with Portfolio Box, you can do so right now. Just click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story, set up your free account, start learning how this works, start following some of these tips that I'm talking about. And then if you happen to win the photo challenge, guess what? We upgrade that site to a pro account. How nice is that, right? How nice is that? So I want to give a big shout out to the Portfolio Box folks, not only for sponsoring the show, but for providing the prizes for the photo challenges and just making this whole experience very educational and very fun. Tune in next week, new challenge, winner of this one. And if you haven't submitted your shot yet, by the way, we've got some good ones this week, but if you haven't submitted your shot yet for Black and White Portrait Contest, there's still time. Just follow the instructions in the show notes or just send it to thenimblephotographer@gmail.com with the subject line Black and White Portrait Contest. Thanks so much to Portfolio Box. Love having you guys as part of this community. I want to give a big shout out to James Hess and Joseph Schreiber for their generous donations to the Film Camera Shop. You know, I've been talking about if you have some film cameras around that you haven't been using and you want to get them in the hands of photographers who will put them to use, I have the Film Camera Shop on Etsy that I use not only to help support the podcast, but to also provide great gear for the analog community. It's been working out really wonderfully. And I have been receiving stuff from you folks, and I really appreciate it. I just cannot tell you how much I appreciate your contributions to this whole effort. But James and Joseph have taken it to another level. Both of them pulled together beautiful collections. They got them all packed up. They shipped them to me. It makes the shop more exciting to have great equipment in there. And then it also really helps the podcast, you know, when we have really wonderful stuff to sell. So a big thanks to James and Joseph both. And I appreciate it so much. I love having active photographers in our community do things like this, you know, subscribe to Patreon or you know, donate cameras, you know, whatever it happens to be. That's what makes things go. And if you would like to participate in this, all you have to do is use the contact form on the Nimble Photographer. Big thanks to everyone who has donated so far, and especially James and Joseph, who went the extra mile. I have an update for our TDS workshops. I'm going to talk about three workshops, actually. Joshua Tree, San Francisco, and Sonoma Coast. I have updates for all three. Start with Joshua Tree. It's sold out. So we went through the whole registration process. All the seats are taken. I'm really excited about the group that we have. And now we're going to start doing our final planning for this adventure in the high desert during the spring. I'm really excited about it. I know some folks have asked me about Joshua Tree since it's a national park and it is being affected by the government shutdown. I think they'll get it sorted out by then, but if they don't get it sorted out by March, boy, that would be something, wouldn't it? But if they don't get it sorted out by March, I have plan B and I have plan C. Anyone who's been to one of my workshops knows that I try to be ready for just about everything. It's such a great area. We're going to have an amazing time regardless. Now, San Francisco Street Photography Workshop. I actually think after five great seasons, this workshop has run its course. This year, there just wasn't the momentum for it. There wasn't the excitement. We weren't getting people on the reserve list. And, you know, everything that I do anyway seems to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I think we're at the end for the San Francisco Street Photography Workshop. So I'm not going to do that one this year. I'm going to go ahead and cancel that workshop so I can focus on the Sonoma Coast Workshop, which we have a lot of momentum for and which people seem very excited about. That workshop, Sonoma Coast, is in July 17th through the 19th. I've secured a beautiful home for us just south of Bodega Bay. We've got a great headquarters, a beautiful headquarters. I mean, this is two great places. We got a great place for Joshua Tree and we got a great place for the Sonoma Coast Workshop. So I've got a great game plan already. I'm fine-tuning it right now and then we'll do reservations for that. As of right now, We still have one or two seats open. So if you want to, you can go to the workshop's reserve list page, and I have the link to that. All you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com, and you'll see workshops right there, and you can get on the reserve list for Sonoma Coast. If you want to make sure that you get a registration form, when we open registration for that, that is going to be an amazing event. And part of what we're going to be doing is visiting spots where movies have been shot in Sonoma County, which is going to be a blast. We'll do some great landscape work. We're going to obviously be doing work along the shore, this beautiful coast in Sonoma County. It's going to be really good time, July 17th through 19th. And then I'll be talking about the Humboldt Redwoods workshop up the road a bit once I get the details for Sonoma Coast nailed down. By the way, a few folks might have noticed that we did have a problem with the Nimble Photographer site a while back. We had a weird DNS problem. I don't know how the records got messed up. It wasn't anything that we did, but something happened somewhere. So we got it sorted out. So if you had a problem going over there before, everything's working great now. And you can go there for the contact form, to get in touch with me about anything. And you can also go there to get on the reserve list for both Sonoma Coast and for the Humboldt Redwoods workshops that are coming up. Inner Circle members, I have a new photo challenge for us. This one is going to be cool. I saw it somewhere else. I don't remember exactly. And I go, I want to do that challenge. And that challenge is raw capture. Raw capture. So the idea of that photo challenge is going to be that it's a shot right out of the camera. That's what you enter in the challenge. So we're going to look at stuff right out of the camera for this challenge. I'm really excited about it. Patreon members, all you have to do is go over to the Patreon site and I'll have all the information that you need there. And we'll come up with a cool prize for the person that wins the photo challenge for raw capture. And that is going to start. I think I'm going to try to get everything there today. So it should be there when you go over there. Big thanks to all of our Patreon members for supporting this show, for keeping this podcast on the air. Again, active members really help make this podcast go. Patreon members, you are about as active as they get. A big thanks to all of you. And finally, I want to mention our friends at Red River Paper. It's funny. With those of us that are on Macs, with the Mojave update, it caused some printing problems with our Canon Pro 100s and 5x7 prints of all things. And I was getting emails and text messages about it. I was going through it myself and I was going, gosh, you know, I hate stuff like this. You know, everything's working and then you go to do something and then it's not working. So I'm going to write an article about it because there are some workarounds while we wait for the update for the OS. But one thing that it showed me was how many people love printing with Red River paper. How many people are, you know, using, you know, the Canon Pro 100 or, you know, one of the deals that they got recently. And then the impact it has when something goes wrong, you know, at the OS level that prevents us from doing what we love to do. If you are not printing stuff, you're really missing out on a big part of photography. Go to the Red River Paper site. Click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story. You know, learn about what's going on. They have reviews. They have tutorials. And, of course, they got a ton of great paper. They are there. I mean, their whole existence is to support the community for inkjet printing, and they do a great job of it. A big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. That's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Jeremiah. All the updates, lots going on. Big announcement happening here in another day, and we're going to talk about it on next week's show. Make sure you come back. I think you'll be very interested in this piece of equipment that I'll be discussing. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.